SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Well, welcome to Monday, everybody, and Breeders' Cup pre-entry day. A little hard to kick off with the usual greeting, the, not a very good morning. It's going to be a bit of a tribute show, and I didn't necessarily expect it to this degree yesterday when word started to circulate that Bob Neumeier, that Neumi, had succumbed to a heart-related incident, I guess. Those specifics are immaterial. We all know that in the last 5 years since he had that stroke that he courageously recovered from, had some health, battled some health related problems, and the outpouring of just love and appreciation for Neumi from every corner of sports fandom is, I guess, predictable. Probably the best way to put it. There's so many levels of Bob Neumeier to connect to and appreciate. And I think part of the reason there's been this just really touching and heartwarming response is because he was so genuine and so easy to connect with. And I'm not even talking about getting to meet him in person. If you were listening on the radio, watching on TV, it didn't matter, really. He was so personal and so just approachable. And then that, you know, that carried out in real life, in person. If you haven't gone and had a chance over the last, it's basically, you know, it'll be coming up on 24 hours, I guess. If you haven't seen the Facebook and Twitter and message board stories from people who met him at the racetrack, who met him at the OTV, who met him at a hockey arena, who met him at a football game, met him anywhere. What you saw, that affability, that warm smile, and kind eyes, that was Bob Neumeier. And even beyond, I think for a lot of people, and particularly as someone who grew up in Hartford, near Hartford, in New England, if you're a New Englander and you're, I would suppose, I don't know, 30 and over, 35 and over, Bob Neumeier was a sports caster that was one of your and remains one of, and will remain one of your touchstones. I wrote yesterday about being in the stands at the Civic Center for a it wasn't a hockey, it wasn't just a hockey game, for the Whalers against the Minnesota Fighting Saints. And obviously, you know, being at the game in which a brawl of legendary proportion broke out. And the spectacle, you know, as a fan in front of you is one thing. As it's going on, Numi is with Bill Rasmussen describing the action. And that description, which is widely available, I linked that, you know, I put the link up to YouTube. It's one of the, it's a description of a moment that's one of my, personally, one of my most treasured memories as a kid, for a number of reasons that if I start to talk about, as if I'm already not affected by this news, it would only, you know, further the difficulties of talking about Bob. But the Whalers released a 45 record with their ridiculous theme song, Brass Bonanza, that was played whenever they'd come on the ice or when they would score a goal. And on the flip side, they put about 3.5, 4, 5 minutes of the play-by-play of Numi. And so from my, ever since 1975, so it's 45 years. I've listened, and so when, every so often, whenever, you know, something related comes up to the Whalers and the Civic Center and Hartford, whatever it is, and the realization that Bob was 70, I'm 61, and so I was 15 sitting in the Civic Center, and that means that Bob Neumeier was 24 years old in the first season that he was the play-by-play voice of the World Hockey Association New England Whalers. It's astounding. Think about that. A professional sports franchise, play-by-play man at 24 years old. It gives you an idea of how talented Numi is. And his outward presence is what is so winning about him, and it's why, you know, his airtime, screen time was always engaging. He loved racing. He loved hockey. He did other things. He did Olympic coverage, and they, I think he did some football too, and so forth. But he loved horse racing, and he loved to bet, and he was good. He's a very good opinion and insight, and his interest in his screen, you know, whoever he was paired with, and we'll hear from virtually. I'm still getting people. And that's why this is going to turn into really a 3-hour. Celebration of Numi, I started to think, well, who, you know, who do I have to include? It's more like who wouldn't want to line up to say what a joy he was to be around and to work with. And And there's so many aspects, and I'll try to get as many of it, as much of it as I possibly can, in terms of, you know, the sides of Bob to appreciate, and that includes from his Boston roots. He was from Weymouth. From his Boston roots, Michael Blowen, and Michael's known him 40 plus years, and Michael will be our first visitor. Also later, Mike Welsh, same scenario, a contemporary, younger, but a contemporary, and like myself, I mean, Mike undoubtedly, would hear him on WBZ and on television and so forth. I mean, you know, he also called Bruins games and the Terriers, BU. So we'll try to get a Boston perspective as part of this. And then from the NBC side, colleagues, I could open the floor, and there would be just a rush through the gates to pay tribute. Billy Rappaport will join us, the legendary and irrepressible Billy Rappaport, the man in black, the field producer of so many Triple Crown events and Breeders' Cups. And Billy will talk about, you know, the thought from a production side. I'm sure there's so many directors, Rob Hyland, and I'm sure if I went looking for executives, Ken Schanzer and whoever, they would be happy to contribute. Jay Pribman will join us, as will Kenny Rice, Ed Olczyk, Randy Moss, Lafitte Pinkai III, who all shared moments undoubtedly that are going to be special memories. And Mike Battaglia, we have to get Mike. I know that Lynn Schneerson. It's just ridiculous. Everybody at Suffolk and people at Rockingham, anybody that would call in to the Dale and Numi show on radio, this is one of those people, and I can't, you know, those of us that have watched him on TV, it's one thing. If you were from New England, he's as much a part of New England radio and TV history as Bob and Ray. I mean, he's just, and for us in Hartford at WTIC, you know, Arnold Dean, and he had such a great tone and delivery, and just, you know, I've been on with me some, I don't know, probably a half a dozen times over the years, and it was always a treat. We were at, I remember being at Saratoga, and he was with Michelle, with his wife, and our thoughts and love go out to Michelle, who was, I mean, just dutiful when you know, the stroke and recovery from the stroke. It was definitely Travers. And I think it was the one of Jimmy's, one of Jimmy Jerkins, maybe Mrs. Bryant. And we spent the time with the two of them, you know, kind of talking and you know, waiting for, you know, for the press conference and so forth. And it, whenever you saw him, he was just so engaging. So warm. And you'll hear echoes of that all morning. So with that introduction, we'll reach for Michael, get Michael Blowen to start us off. But at the same time, let me also include, as we reach for Michael, the weekend racing, and it was very much as we kind of advertised going into the weekend, that there was there's some certainly Keeneland and Belmont, some very tough sledding. You had to be really, really clever, and you actually had to see around a few corners to score. I mean, the scores were there to be had, and we had some very good ideas from the usual lineup, and that included Shoe, Bobby Shoemaker, who loved he's my honey badger. That was a great call in the Perryville. That it's funny, the Raven run, I don't know, it could have gone the way you looked at it, a lot of different options. Caramel Swirl ended up being what, second choice? Both of the Mott runners, I think they were first and second choice, Obligatory and Caramel Swirl. Chad with Public Sector, who muscled his way to the win. And the Hill Prince, he's on a nice roll. You had all kinds of exciting races too to talk about, and we'll feather that in as the morning and as today and tomorrow unfold. Shifty She, it's funny that Noble Damsel, there was a scenario where you had potential for one or another for Shifty She, or who was it on the outside that might have, you know, gotten away and had potential to wire. And it was in fact Shifty She that was able to accomplish it. And I mean, I used her as a seed for just that potential scenario, but that was to no avail, because the when it came to the cross country, and we'll get to the multi-race wagers, Arlington, the Maryland Million, came off really well. Watched a number of those races. We went out first thing early Saturday. Went to Rochester to see the new baby, who's just adorable and sweet as pie, just a little tiny, little peanut. But we also, you know, you get the benefit of the older sister to spend time with too. So Spencer came up from Brooklyn. We picked him up Friday night at the train station, and we brought him out there. Uncle Spencer, so he spent really a nice part of Saturday in Rochester with Zach and Andrea and the new baby and Lennon, then Tina driving back. I got to watch racing from about 3:30 on, so it was a pretty ideal scenario. We had family time, and then we had racing time, and that included the action at Laurel, which was really good, and the veteran gelding that won the classic for Louis Carvajal and Mikel Sanchez, that Prindimi, that was a courageous effort. Some good maiden races to talk about. We'll get it all in, the Hawthorne Derby and more, but we'll table some of that uh for a little bit. I'm sure we'll talk some of it with some of the racing with Rich Migliori. I want to mention, and I will certainly get Jason Barkley, who got his first graded stake win with Spooky Channel in the Sycamore. And a lot of celebratory atmosphere around that win by Spooky with Julian Leparoux. And yesterday in that Dowager, Summer in Saratoga for Joe Sharp with Corey Lannery. A nice mix of winners of the on the stake side, and actually the allowance racing was really it was a really strong week, frankly, from my perspective, because I played virtually every day. Kind of sat back a little bit yesterday and watched, did a couple of bets, but played Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday, and actually we leaked quite a bit of oil on Saturday when it was all said and done, to be honest. So but the racing, as I said on Friday, if you're listening to the replay, the racing has just been really good and deep, with the big fields. I don't want to go too far afield here. Pre-entry day, of course, at Breeders' Cup, and the committees will sift through, and any of the oversubscribed races will be decided upon, and pecking order created. So we will on Wednesday. And typically the, and I'll check with Jimmy Gluckson about the release. Usually, I'm almost positive we do it at about 11, I think, right? I think 11 o'clock on Wednesday. And we've taken the, I think Seth and I, right? We have gone over that on Wednesdays in the third hour. So Breeders' Cup upon us, and Michael Blowen is joining us. And Michael's actually close by. He's right in Saratoga. Michael, I could have had you come over to the house.
I would have liked that, Steve.
Michael, I thought of you pretty quickly, along with the NBC colleagues of NUMMI, knowing that you were certainly at the Globe when he was hired out of Syracuse, but more for his time at WBZ and as just a ubiquitous and popular presence in Boston and New England television and radio.
You know, if you really want to know about Bob Neumeier's, what he meant to Boston as a whole and to the Boston sports community in particular, yesterday was a rare day in which every one of the New England teams won. Yeah, the Patriots won, the Celtics won, the New England Revolution won, everybody won, and the lead story was about Bob Neumeier in the Globe today, so... They knew what they were talking about, and Bob was just an amazing, amazing guy. You know, back in those days, everybody that was in print journalism, because we weren't as physically attractive as our colleagues in TV, always thought the TV guys were making more money and they weren't any good as reporters. But Bob Neumeier certainly broke that stereotype. He was a very serious professional. He wasn't terribly serious about himself, but he's very, very serious about his business. And he was a really good handicapper. There's nobody you'd rather run into to sit with at the simulcast at Suffolk or at the live racing at Suffolk in those days than Bob Neumeier, because he had this really interesting psychological manner, which was he would tell you why he liked a horse, and then he would make you explain why you liked another horse, and it was always very educational and never emotional. And he was just a wonderful guy to hang out with. He was a real professional. He loved horse racing. I mean, back in those days, you couldn't get into the press box in Suffolk. Sam McCracken and Eddie Gray and Ronnie Indrasano and Paul Daly. I mean, it was mobbed all the time, and no one was better liked in there than Bob Neumeier. And nobody, I don't think anybody, because they liked him so much, I don't think anybody ever resented his great success. He and Michelle had been to the farm twice in Kentucky to see the old horses. And I got to tell you, it was really one of the thrills of a lifetime to get on the golf cart and drive around with Bob Neumeier and Michelle and talk and let him tell me more about these horses than I knew. And it was really a treat.
I mentioned and tried to convey that in the opening, the affability and that one of those rare broadcast journalists that connected with people through the medium and then when you met him there was this exact same person. You didn't have one on-air presence and then some other person that you encountered. And what is really remarkable, Michael, in these 24 hours are all these personal encounter reflections from horse players and industry people on our side. And I shouldn't limit it to horse racing, but horse racing probably was in a lot of ways the best vehicle for him because he interacted with people on a regular basis. I mean, because when being on air, Derby, Preakness, Belmont, Breeders' Cup, it left him tons of opportunity to just to be at the racetrack, and so I'm seeing Rockingham comments and obviously Suffolk and Saratoga and anywhere else and everybody, and then there's the professionals that he worked with, the ones that came up after him, all reflecting how much he helped them, and this was just a one-of-a-kind talent there's not a lot of.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Steve, because he, a lot of the people that work in television, they have to have a pretty serious ego, and he did not. I mean, as I mentioned, he took his work seriously, but not himself, and he really knew what he was talking about. And I think that's a lot of the respect comes from the fact that he did his homework, no matter whether it was racing or basketball or whatever the story was, he did his homework. And oftentimes he would scoop the Globe, and it kind of irritated some of the people in the sports department because he would get the story first. And he was one of the first TV guys that could ever do that to the kind of reputable, sports department that we had at the Globe at the time. I think he got great respect from people, and he was nice to people. I mean, when he went to Suffolk or Rockingham just as a fan and just for a day of playing the horses, he did get involved in these really great conversations with the fans, and he signed autographs, and he was really nice to everybody. And I think that's a very important point you make. He didn't have to put on some secret identity thing. He didn't have to go Bruce Wayne to Batman in order to because he was the same person. He never had to put on any kind of costume or any kind of airs or any kind of, pretend to be nice on TV and then be rotten the rest of your life. He wasn't that kind of person. What you saw is what you got, and what you got was pretty impressive.
Billy Rappaport's going to join us next, Michael, and you know, from a journalist standpoint, and I'm sure that his other colleagues, for those that didn't join us from the opening, Kenny Rice, Jay Privman, Ed Olchek, Randy Moss, Lafitte Benkai III, all going to join us this morning. From a journalism standpoint, you know, and he's a Newhouse grad. He went to Syracuse, and one of the things that is really noteworthy is, you know, he had that ability to, I'm sure, prepare remarks and write, you know, write for television, as it were, and probably even, you know, I knowing what I do, I mean, in terms of not a scripting, but you know, notes, program notes and things to, you know, to carry you through, you know, talking points. But his ability to convey really succinctly, I mean, his delivery was exceptional. And in terms of and like you suggested, the way he would handicap and have explanation, but he did that as a reporter, and really any assignment, that's what impresses me the most, is knowing that whatever topic and whatever, whether it was the play-by-play or the color or the Olympics or football, whatever he was doing, he just had the most polished approach and an exceptional broadcast journalist.
Yeah. It's, you know, as is often said in ways that sometimes aren't that appropriate, you know, he's irreplaceable because you can't think of anybody that had the kind of education that he had. And the other thing that I really liked about Bob is a lot of the sports guys develop friendships and they get scoops, and the scoops are exchanged for maybe overlooking certain things. He was never that way. He treated everybody the same. You could hate him, and he'd treat you the same as if you loved him. If you were a sports figure, he treated everybody the same. He really was the embodiment of trying to be as objective as humanly possible in a job where it's very difficult. And they don't come that way very often.
No. No, and because, you know, because of the varied assignments, I think that's one of the things that is what's so it's so remarkable about the outpouring, you know, the BU fans and Bruins fans and Whaler fans and horse racing, I think, treasured him the most in a lot of ways. I'm sure everybody in those other areas, are going to hold him dear. But when it comes to horse racing, he really felt like you knew that he was one of ours, quote unquote.
Yeah, he was passionate about it. He adored it, and as many problems as the sports had over the years, that Bob covered it so diligently. He didn't overlook the problems, but he knew what he was talking about. He didn't exaggerate them either. And you know, with people like him around, you wouldn't get all this misinformation that we get all the time now from the social media, because you had somebody you could go to, and he could tell you what was going on and give you the straight story. Mm-hmm. Now, Gracie's going to miss him a lot. I mean, over the last few years when he was missing, after he had the stroke and he went through the rehab, I mean, he's, you know, that's another thing, Steve. He's so tough. I mean, I can't imagine going through, you know, your his last couple of years with the kind of courage that he had. I mean, just absolutely amazing. I mean, the irony, of course, that he made his living, you know, communicating, and then he would have a stroke that made communicating a little more difficult, and him living through all of that and going through all that, and Michelle's just an exceptional human being too, and I can't imagine what she's going through now. But I mean, it was an amazing. It was an amazing act of courage. His fight. I hadn't seen him in a while, but but I would get reports on how he was doing, and he just sucked it up and went on. You know, that was really amazing performance. I just he's a really good example for a lot of us.
Michael, I appreciate it, and everything all right at the farm, and I know you're heading to a meeting tomorrow about the Sturbridge, the potential equine sports park at Sturbridge.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that meeting. It's just an open house where the principal is going to talk to the people in the community about what the plans are, and I don't know Richard Fields very well. My time at Suffolk had ended by the time he took over, but I do know he had the toughest anti-slaughter policy of any track in the country. I mean, if your horse went to slaughter, you were banned from the track. You couldn't train a horse there. So when he and Lou Raffetto called and we spoke about doing something, before even the construction of the track, they started thinking about aftercare first. So that's one of the reasons that I'm going to go down there and check it out. And I'm really looking forward to it, because can you imagine going from, talk about, sometimes it's like Don Quixote in the windmill. You go, what, you're going to build a, there's no track, thoroughbred tracks left in New England, and you're going to build one from scratch? I mean, wow. But the audacity of it, and I think they've got the right people involved. So, we'll see what happens, but it's going to be an interesting meeting, I'm sure, and I'm hoping it's an interesting next few years.
We'll keep an eye on it. The plans look gorgeous, and we'll see what. There seems to be a real chance for it. So we'll keep tabs. And Michael, as always, appreciate it, and we'll talk soon. OldFriendsEquine.org, of course. Michael Blowen, everybody. Michael, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
We'll continue, and Billy Rappaport is with us, and we appreciate the opportunity to have Billy talk about field directing Bob Neumeier. And Billy, I've only got 3 hours this morning. I could fill probably the entire week with people that want to come forward to appreciate Bob Neumeier.
Well, good morning, Steve. Yeah, no doubt. I could probably fill up a week myself with just the stories that I could tell. You know, we lost a really good guy and a great friend. And a guy who loved our sport so much, so much. It was amazing to be around him and to experience that energy. And, Steve, and I appreciate, first off, you allowing me to come on and honor my friend. People don't realize that, pardon me, that Bob and I go back to 1979 in Boston, when I was a freshman at Boston University, and Bob had just left WFSB in Hartford and had come to work as the number two or three sports reporter at WBZ in Boston. And we met at a Monday night football game when I was there bringing Mr. Cosell his drinks, but that's another story for another time. And I went up and introduced myself, and we became friends. And another thing that people don't know is that when I was in college, I created these round card girl beauty pageants for all of Marvin Hagler's fights. And we always needed celebrity judges. And Numi was my first call, and he was always the first to arrive. And he was always as engaged and as involved as you could hope for from anybody, and especially as a friend, he was always there. And in 1986, when I created the Breeders' Cup newsfeed for SMTI, the great agency that really helped create and start the Breeders' Cup, with Mike Leeds and Mike Trigger, they allowed me to begin to develop this idea about bringing horse racing, specifically the Breeders' Cup, and the stories of the Breeders' Cup, because nobody knew what the Breeders' Cup was in 1986, pretty much, to all of the radio and television news stations across the country. And I remember the story ran in the racing forum when we were at the Radio and Television News Directors Convention in 1986. And back then, you had booths at these conventions. And, you know, you had phones in the booth. So I'm there with the gal that was working with me, meeting news directors, talking about the Breeders' Cup, here's who we are, we're going to have all these stories, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And the phone rings. Phone rings in the booth. Who's calling me here, you know? Pick up the phone. And, hello, is this Bill Rappaport? Yes, it is. I don't know if you remember me, but my name is Bob Neumeier. I'm like, yeah, I remember you, Bob, of course. Now, we hadn't spoken in maybe a couple of years because I had left college and gone on and done other things, and he remained at BZ. And parenthetically, when I was a sophomore, he brought me in and gave me the opportunity to interview the sports director's job as a sophomore in college with his boss as the news director of BZ. I didn't get the job, but that's exactly the way it was supposed to be. But he says to me, I see you're doing this horse racing thing, this news feed. I said, yeah. He says, I'm reading in the racing form. I said, you read the racing form? He says, yeah. And to that point, our relationship had never involved horse racing. I had no idea this guy was basically living in a tent at Suffolk Downs, you know, for all those years. I didn't know anything about racing at the time, and I had just gotten into the sport. He says, do you need any reporters? And I said to him, yes, we do. And at that point, I had Kenny Rice already in the mix, and my goal always was to find great reporters, great sports reporters in news who really understood journalism, who loved horse racing. And who knew horse racing, because that was the key to the key component, was you had to be both. But maybe a journalist first, horse racing passion second. And I had no idea Bob had that knowledge or understanding. Well, long story clearly longer, I brought him in for the first Breeders' Cup newsfeed in 1986. He did amazing. He continued on with us in that at the Kenny for many years. And in 1990, NBC, we pushed for it. And he was there on the ground during that very difficult and tragic day at Belmont. And he did an amazing job. Anyway, that's the long story.
I'm a terrific backstory to the origins. And in fact, Kenny's going to join us next, Billy, from a standpoint of personal connectedness, I suppose. Over the last, I suppose, eight years, his stroke was 2016, and you were in the midst of your fight against cancer. I imagine that, you know, from a battling back to 100% health, you were kindred spirits there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Bob and I were very close on a personal level, too. I mean, I played in all of his member guests at his international in outside of Boston, and we spent many times together. Like I can tell you, I got plenty of stories to tell about Bob, and we spent a lot of time together, both personally and professionally. And yes, I mean, he saw what I went through. Eddie Olczyk is another great example.
That's right.
Somebody that I think Bob leaned on when he was going through stuff. But he, more than anything else, his wife Michelle, who is, she is unbelievable, the Rock of Gibraltar. She's been so critical in all of his success after what happened with his stroke, as everybody knows, at Churchill that day. So we, you know, we're always there for him, but he's a pro's pro, and understood journalism, understood horse racing, married those two in a way, quite frankly, in my opinion. I mean, clearly Tom Hammond is the gold standard, but at the end of the day, watching Newmy's work on the ground in 1990, if you go back and look at that Breeders' Cup, which was clearly, unfortunately, as we all know, a very tragic day. He was the go-to guy. and did an unbelievable job. And his journalistic instincts is what made that possible, to cover those stories in a way where, frankly, look, not a ton of people on that telecast had real broadcast journalism newsroom experience. And he did. And it made a huge difference. Huge. In terms of the way that telecast came off.
I brought that up with Michael Blowen just before his Syracuse origins, Newhouse, and having the writer's mentality, and his first job was at the Globe.
Exactly, and he was a copy boy there, and then went on to the journalism, to the broadcast side. But that's what he was. First and foremost, Bob was a journalist. Period. End of conversation. The fact that he was on TV, the fact that he was horse racing, that was all great. I mean, he clearly, talk about the perfect exacta. I mean, having your cake and eat it too, you should have seen him when he showed up for that first Breeders' Cup newsfeed. It was funny because it was during the 86 World Series when the Red Sox were playing the Mets, and, clearly he being a Boston guy, me being a New York guy, and a Mets fan, that was the whole thing. And I can tell you stories about that episode. But at the end of the day, he was... He was a real journalist, and all of his journalistic instincts were always taking over. As great a horse player he was, and believe me, I know he's up there in heaven working on his pick six right now, so trying to decide whether or not he's going to use Pegasus or not. But, he loved the game. He understood it as a sport and from the point of view and through the prism of being a player, which not everybody does, and really dove into it to the point where, I don't know if you even remember this probably, but we did a project together called Playing to Win. You can probably look it up online. That we did for the Daily Racing Forum. And it was a video about how to bet. And we spent, I remember a snowstorm in Boston that shut down the whole city. I had gotten a hotel suite for us to write in because we'd shot all the scenes at Santa Anita. We did the whole thing out there, and we did some stuff in Vegas as well. And Catherine Wilkins and Manny Minger at the Racing Forum greenlit this thing, and it was a great piece. But Bob always understood the writing mattered, the storytelling mattered, the journalism mattered, but more than anything else, if he could combine horse racing and all of that, journalism and storytelling, man, he was one happy cat. So it was always great to see those two things come together. He did great work with other sports, as we all know. But when he was around horse racing, he was having his cake and eating it too.
The handicapping aspect, and you, of course, have. Seen the parade and the the sort of the melange of handicapper talent that's been included, and sometimes and we're talking over several networks between ESPN and NBC and CBS and ABC, and It's depending on the executive production and sort of the designs of network, who they want to offer has taken different forms, and frequently it's been a certain percentage of shtick, but he could be counted on as quality handicapping presentation and rationale and approach, and he could make it fun too as well. But
Louis was a fun guy. Believe me, I hung out with him enough to know. I like to see, put the FU in fun. I think that you touched on something really important, Steve. Really important. You could count on him in two ways in a show. Think about this. You could count on him really to do great handicapping, really top shelf handicapping, you know, and have a little bit of the shtick, and because he was a good personality, he was so comfortable on camera because he had so much experience doing it, you could count on all of that energy being right and the legitimacy, the credibility of the handicapping, right? Not just, you know, like me throwing paint against the wall, as he used to say, how I bet. But that's another story for another time. But with him, you could also then flip the switch, and he could go out and cover that really difficult story about Gopher Juan going down in 1990 and cover hard, difficult journalism stories in racing, which, you know, you got to tell the story, and you got to do it the right way. And you got to know that the person doing it is going to have those proper journalistic instincts to ask the right questions, even with a good producer in your ear, to know how to respond, to know how to follow up, and to know the sport well enough to ask the right questions and to ask it the right way. So to have that unique combination, that incredible exacta of a great handicapper with all of the, as I say, the legitimacy of being one, and good on camera and having fun and all that, and then at the same time somebody could go cover a really tough story, and yes, do the light stuff as well, that's very rare. Very, very rare. There's a few people that can do it, but he was certainly the, in my opinion, the model in the beginning. You know, again, Tom Hammond clearly the gold standard of all of that.
And he, the one thing that certainly had to be a treat, and essentially for producers and for directors, he could be paired with anybody.
Because it was never about him. He always rooted for you, right? Even if he was losing, somebody was telling me a story the other day, like, even if you were playing, I think it was Jay Privman said to me something like, you know, you could be betting next to Newman, and you're winning and he's losing. He's still rooting for you. That's the kind of guy Bob Neumeier was. He wasn't jealous. He professional jealousy didn't exist with him. And it exists with others. Right? So, yeah. It was never about him. He just was having fun. He was doing what he loved. Being on television, yeah. Talking about horses, getting to bet horses, people paying me to bet horses. Really? Well, what's going on? So, Steve, that was the energy that came at me in 1986. And, like I said, we've been friends for over 40 years. And, boy, stories to tell. Because, dare I say, we were both single at the time. Believe it or not. That's a different channel on this network.
sometimes we go down that down that path. Billy, Kenny's going to join us here momentarily, and later Jay Privman and Mike Welch, Eddie Olchek, Randy Moss, and Lafitte and Guy. Sure. And
I'm in very good company to talk about a great man and a good friend for sure. Well, so we're all set about losing.
Exactly.
And I know Michelle may or may not be listening, but we send her and the family all our love and condolences.
Billy, I appreciate it. And are we going to see you in a couple of weeks?
No, sir. My phone has not rung. So what is that Jimmy Buffett line? If the phone doesn't ring, it's me. So unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be there. But you know me, I'm always there in spirit. And I wish everybody the best and nothing but good luck. And most importantly, safe racing.
Billy, thank you.
Steve, thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Stay well.
Yeah. Billy Rappaport, everybody, one of the great field directors, producers, creators in television. I won't limit it to sports. As responsible as anyone for the way racing is presented. And has been, and as he explained, part of the development of the Breeders' Cup into the you know, the kind of monolith that it's become, and another person that was there from those origins, and you just heard Billy kind of tee up Kenny Rice, and Kenny joins us now. Kenny, to you and all the NBC colleagues, just so sorry to lose Numi like this.
Well, thank you, Steve, and it's good to be with you to share a little bit of Numi with everyone, because Numi was kind of everyone's guy. I think that was the appeal of him, you know. People would come up, and he was very gracious to fans and fellow handicappers, and people just want tips. I never saw a snarky move on the part of Bob Neumeier when he was dealing with the public, and that was genuine on his part.
I completely not just agree. I tried to make that exact point as part of his appeal, Kenny. And my first awareness of Bob Neumeier comes as a teenager growing up east of the river of Hartford, and with him as the voice of the Whale. And I was 15. And so, you know, to realize later, by the way, that he was 24 is pretty amazing to me, and just kind of reflects what a brilliant broadcaster he was to be put into, you know, that level of assignment, so early in the start of his career. But his affability that just kind of came through the radio or came through the TV, and that was why there's such an outpouring towards him.
Yeah, and he really enjoyed being at the events. It wasn't like work for Neumeier. You know, Numi enjoyed being there. He enjoyed talking to the trainers and meeting people and writing stories. He was a tremendous writer, which gets lost a lot in television. And, you know, it's true, too, to a large extent. But Numi took a great deal of pride in his writing. He was a wonderful communicator, not just standing up there and holding a microphone. And, you know, and we enjoyed, you know, sharing stories a little bit about our backgrounds. I was working local TV in Lexington, and he was doing Channel 4 in Boston about the time we first met through our great friend, the one and only Billy Rappaport, introduced us in the mid-1980s. We worked on something called the Breeders' Cup News Feed. I don't know if anybody out there has heard of that, but the deal was, Steve, that we would write our stories, and we would send them up on a satellite each week of the Breeders' Cup. And if you wanted to use it, you could use it. And the hope was that in markets that didn't really care much about horse racing, they might care about the personal people stories, which Numi was so good at doing. And, you know, that's how it went. And it was a very successful run of, I guess, a dozen years or so that Bob and I did the news feed together before we started ESPN work together that obviously went on to NBC.
Billy just talked about that, and it's probably, you know, new to a lot of people, and he also talked about, you know, reaching out to you and to Bob whenever there was a new idea. I mean, you talk about, you know, you undoubtedly countless production meetings and such, and you know, just talk about him as a colleague and it being getting ready for, you know, what I call always, you know, the greatest unscripted drama in sport when it comes to horse racing.
Yeah, you know, and that was the thing. We had some of those production meetings the early days. David Michaels was our producer. We would have 4-hour meetings sometimes, and you know, getting ready for the show is very intense at times. And Neumeier was great. Numi and I would often sit together, and you know, he had this. He would give you the look. He could roll his eyes better than any comic. You know, you're thinking like Mel Brooks and some of the great comics. Neumeier could have been right with them on his facial expressions at times, which told more stories that way at times among his friends. You know, there was that unspoken communications that we all had together because I probably did. I don't know. Somebody asked me yesterday. I don't know, Steve. I might have worked with Bob longer than any person, going back to the news feed. And then when the ESPN stuff we did in the late 90s together, and then, you know, transitioning on to NBC, we certainly did well over 100 shows or more together. And we spent I don't know how many hours together. And the great thing with Noomi is he always had a story. You know, I mean, it would just be some, like, it would either be an off-the-wall thing or something semi-serious, but he always had something fresh to tell you, even if it was only 3 or 4 days between seeing each other. And, he just was a guy that enjoyed himself, he enjoyed life, but he took everything he did on air seriously, but he was really kind of a self-deprecating guy. He was not ego-driven like so many people in the media are, you know? And, I mean, let's face it, we all have some egos. But Bob just kind of rolled with things. He never got too upset. I don't think I've ever seen him angry personally that I ever saw him angry. I don't remember him ever saying a bad word about anybody, you know? I mean, sometimes we would laugh at those that got a little too full of themselves, you know? We'd have some fun with that. But there was no meanness about Bob Neumeier. And I read in a Boston Globe, you know, a really nice story they did on him. And his lovely wife, Michelle, was saying that, you know, he was a fiercely private person. And he was. And I don't think Noomi, you know, if any of us, with very few exceptions, called him, you know, say 3 months ago, he would have told us actually how serious his condition was. He just didn't want to seem to burden anybody with anything. And, you know, I have great respect for the way he lived his life and the way he chose to do things. And that was always the way it was with Noomi. I remember, when he had his episode at the 09 Derby weekend, you know, we were standing side by side at the Oaks, and all of a sudden he's on the ground. And, you know, that was the Mind That Bird year. And Noomi never made a big deal out of it. He nonchalantly mentioned 2 or 3 years later to Tom Durkin and I that he was having to go in and have a little heart procedure. Maybe look at a valve or something. And he said that kind of casually after we'd had dinner and didn't want to talk about it anymore. You know, I did pry a little bit, and, you know, that was Bob. And I respected his privacy, and I think that he respected everybody else's privacy. Well, he wasn't a guy that, looked to stir anything up and didn't look to, you know, go beyond except to tell the story, and he told it, I think, as well as anyone.
Yeah, and one part when it comes to particularly the stroke and his recovery, and it was so clear that he had worked tirelessly to, you know, to get healthy, and that he wanted to be back on his own terms, and that I think I saw a quote somewhere. That he didn't want it to be he didn't want to embarrass himself. He didn't want it to be maudlin. He wanted to come back as himself and the same Noomi that everybody appreciated. And the one thing I can recall from that episode as well is him coming back and winning the handicapping championship, the media contest, that the challenge that we do, that we all participate in. And here he had just come back, and he on air, and he won that, and it was sort of a perfect story, really, that he was able to, you know, that right away, just to remind everybody that, I'm back and I'm 100%.
Well, wasn't that perfect? I mean, that was, and I've been with, you know, Zing made, and you know this, Steve, I mean, that's why he made him such a great handicapper. I've been with Bob when he actually lost what I consider considerable money, and he never blinked. He never whined about it. He never said, let me tell you how much, nothing. And then I've been with him when he's won what I know is a considerable amount of money, and he didn't gloat on it. I mean, I think all the great handicappers are that way. You know, you talk a little bit about the one that got away, but, you can take it and deal with it. But I believe, and I did talk to him after that win. I don't know, that might have been in many ways, not monetarily, but personally, the most rewarding handicap event he ever won. And I was so happy for him. I think everybody was. And, that was, And that was, again, you mentioned, you know, and I told him several times, I've had two aunts that went through, had strokes. One was debilitating. She was never the same, and her life was very short after that. And the other actually did all right, but there were signs that she had had a stroke, but she had several more years of life. And I was just amazed how well Noomi came out of it. I mean, you wouldn't know that he had a stroke unless you actually knew Noomi. When I first saw him, I guess almost a year later, it was just fascinating to me how good he looked and how strong he was. And again, I think that just speaks. That's Bob Neumeier. You know, he was a guy that could do things on his own. He didn't seek anyone's help. And he lived a life that he chose. And I had, again, you know, such great respect for all that. He was really, a one of a kind. And you say that with a lot of people sometimes, but I really don't. I never met anybody like Noomi. You know, I met a few close, but I never met anybody like Noomi. He was a guy that, you could talk to, not speak to again for 6 months, and pick the same conversation back up. And that was just the way, and that's the way we did things. We didn't talk on a regular basis, but when we worked together, we were in communications. He was a great teammate. It wasn't one of those, hey, I got to get this story because you got that story. And I think that Noomi helped set the tone for a lot of the NBC horse racing coverage. You know, when we all kind of came aboard together, for me, it was in 99 at the Breeders' Cup was my first time we'd all worked together. And, with Battaglia in there as well. And I think that I believe that helped set some of the tone that, you know, we could have a team sport here. We could tell some good stories and have some fun and, sit back and enjoy a great sport and maybe share it with people that don't always follow horse racing. That was kind of the attitude that we took by telling the stories. And as Billy Rappaport knows, and that's why I think he paired us all up, paired Bob and me together on the Breeders' Cup news feed, is that, he wanted to appeal to the people that didn't, they weren't hanging out at the windows all day, but they were out there in mid-America, and they might enjoy horse racing if they got to know it a little better. And that was kind of our aim. We both talked about that. You know, it wasn't like we wanted to dumb it down, but you also wanted to make it appeal to people who were just watching, especially like a Kentucky Derby. They don't watch any other race. And Noomi was very aware of that, and I think his great writing and delivery, kind of kept the bar high for everyone. That, we all wanted to be sure that, we were on the game when it started. That was, because that was the big game. We knew people were going to be watching that day that never saw another horse race, or maybe very few horse races the rest of the year.
And that's really a point well made and framed, Kenny, because the ability to deliver, particularly handicapping information, that is not going to be, that's not going to have serious players just kind of laughing and rolling their eyes. That's a really important aspect, because the serious players that happen to be watching a network feed, very frequently, the complaint is that the networks are more interested in the social stories and so forth, and don't deliver the handicapping information. But that was one of his real strengths, was that whether they were neophytes listening and watching or serious players, nobody would be offended, either talked down to or being ignored if they were serious about the game.
No, that's exactly it, Steve. And one of my favorite days with Noomi was in 1997. Rick Pitino was leaving the University of Kentucky to take the job with the Boston Celtics. And I was still doing local in Lexington, and Bob was still at Channel 4 in Boston. And he called me up the night, in anticipation. We knew that Pitino was going to leave. He said, I'm coming to town. We were both filing our reports. And of course, I guess for him as well, of course, in Lexington, Kentucky basketball coach with named Pitino leaving, that was like all day coverage for us. So, but we did have a break, and we drove around campus, and Noomi and I hung out, and we went to a local burger joint on campus, and it was interesting to see the people that came up to him that wanted to just, tell him how much they enjoyed his horse racing coverage. And I think it meant a lot to him that I think Bob knew he was very famous. In many circles, he was famous, not just in Boston, but I think that knew me, people called him knew me like they knew him. And I think that was the great appeal of Bob, is he came across so approachable. Mm. And they were coming up to us, on the campus that day and throughout, hey, horse racing guys, hey, knew me. What are you in town for, And maybe they didn't know for sure that he worked at Channel 4. But, I think that was just a fun, and it was a fun day for us because we shared a lot of stories that weren't horse racing stories. We talked a lot about basketball and Celtics and all that back then. And, we had our moments where we enjoyed talking about other sports, even though we knew horse racing was what most people knew both of us for. But, we had a chance to discuss some of the other things that we enjoyed covering over the years.
Kenny Rice, greatly appreciate the opportunity to have you share Numi's a tribute and thoughts. And I undoubtedly the network will have something special, I imagine, in a couple of weeks when we're at Breeders' Cup.
It was nice last night to see Rob Hyland and Sam Flood had put together a little tribute that Mike Tirico did on the Sunday Night Football for Numi. And, it was well done and well appreciated by all of us that really cared about him and had the opportunity to get to know him, And so it's been nice talking about him. I don't want to get too mushy because I know Bob well enough. He'd really be rolling his eyes and grimacing if he heard himself talk about what a great guy he was. That would be him, Steve. But I really appreciate it. And congratulations to you again. I'm winning the Jim McKay Award. It's well deserved as one of the great broadcasters in this industry.
Very kind. Kenny Rice, everybody. And you follow Kenny on Twitter, Kenny Rice Sports, of course. And looking forward to Breeders' Cup. Kenny, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
We'll stay right here to the bottom of the hour. And Jay Pridman standing by, and another colleague and friend that was part of really the origins of what Breeders' Cup has become. Jay, so sorry about Numi.
Yeah, it was really a sad situation because, Bob was 70, but I don't think he looked as old as he was, and he certainly didn't act as old as he was. But unfortunately, he'd had some, significant health problems, and it got to be really bad, apparently, in the last couple of months. I didn't even realize he'd gone on hospice, which I found out yesterday. So it had really, really deteriorated, unfortunately. I'm glad he's not suffering, but, it's just heartbreaking. Because as you heard from Kenny, and I'm sure you saw with some of the other things that were said or written about him yesterday, he was just a likable guy. I mean, he just was just a really fun person to be around. And, most importantly for racing purposes, he sincerely loved the game and aspects of it. He loved the reporting parts of it, but he really loved the handicapping parts of it and did very well over the years, hitting a number of pick sixes and having some good scores on the air with NBC. So it was just really a sad development for sure.
And I also, when I put up some couple of social media appreciations yesterday, a lot of people were, oh no, I mean, how, what? And I think people were aware, of the post stroke scenario, but there had not been much. And he apparently, from what the Globe had to say, didn't really widely let it be known that he was I had the same kind of realization as things unfolded yesterday. From a journalism standpoint, and those NBC shows, Jay, I mean, talk about him as a colleague and preparedness and being prepared helps when things go in an unexpected direction. But in racing, even anticipating the unexpected is doesn't guarantee that you can react with adroitly.
No, I mean, his journalism background was the reason he was put in the positions that he was put in over the years until he wasn't on the last few years of the telecast, but you know, he was on for what, you know, nearly 30 years, you know, 20 plus years with the network. And if I'm not mistaken, the first one he did might have been the infamous Breeders' Cup at Belmont Park in 1990, yes. You know, and talk about a trial by fire for a reporter that day, with all that went on with the sprint and then Gopher Wand. And he was always valued. I know. I mean, obviously his handicapping was valued, and those were fun segments that he did. But I know that the great respect that he had from his producers and from colleagues was that he was a terrific reporter. And if things went sideways, he was, you know, one of the go-to guys to make sure the news got done accurately and professionally.
Billy Rappaport joined us earlier, Jay, and he specifically cited that afternoon. Having been at Belmont that day, and everybody, you know, Gopher Wand, of course, is the major point of reference. But an hour and change earlier, Mr. Nickerson had succumbed to a heart ailment and collapsed, and Shaker Nick falls over him. And I mean, the day was marked from early on. It was the most difficult day I ever spent at a racetrack, and I can only imagine what it was like to have to react to it. That's one of the things about him, I think, that's resonating and will be appreciated, is that he could be as serious as necessary, and then the rest of the time was just warm and outgoing and so easy to. Easy to interact with, and I said to Michael Blowen earlier too, one of those people, Jay, that what you saw on television and heard on radio, when you got to meet him in person, that was him. That was 100%. There was no put on or act.
No, not that's exactly right, Steve. I mean, that's exactly who he was, and I'm glad you brought up the Michael Blowen and had Michael on, because Newly played for charity just a few months after he had his stroke and the surgery. That's the charity that he played for, and it was amazing that he won. Just a few months later, he won that charity tournament at the NHC, and that's who he was playing for, was his old friends. So that was, which shows you, he kept it in the family. He was trying to help racing on that level. He was a person who I was talking to. You mentioned Billy Rappaport, who we was close friends with for 40 years plus. I talked to Billy yesterday as well, and we were just talking about how one of the things that we liked about Newey, among the many things we liked about him, is that he genuinely rooted for your success in a business where that's not always the case. And he was very collaborative that way. And not just in terms of on-air work, but in terms of if you were having a good day gambling and he wasn't, he was happy that you were having a good day gambling. And didn't get all jealous and down in the mouth about it. That's just the way he was, and it's one of the reasons he was so liked and admired.
Jay, when did you first meet him and start working with him?
Oh gosh, I mean, back up until last year, owing to COVID, I covered every Breeders' Cup, from the start, from '84, and I know Newey was working on those Racing Across America shows in the late '80s. So I don't have a specific memory of when I first met him, but it had to be then. And then, we obviously overlapped on television work for a number of years. And for a time, we were like the post-race reporter assignments. You go one way and you go the other way. So we'd work together in that capacity. But I'm really bad about specific first memories of people that I've known for a long time, which is one of, I have a lot of faults, and that's add that one to the list. But I don't have a specific memory of when I met him for the first time. But I'd see him going to Boston for the MassCap, which I did a couple of times for those old Fox shows. He'd come to Del Mar in the summer. I'd see him in Florida, so many places over the years, just not work environments, but he liked the track. He liked to play. He made figs, and then he graduated. He was a sheets user, and he was devoted to it. I mean, it was a real passion of his, was playing the horses. So, he was one of those people he'd go on his off day because he liked it. It wasn't just a job for him. It was a passion.
It was evident, and like so many, it's funny. Like so many horse players, the fact that his other favorite sport was hockey. It's amazing how there's that parallel, and I don't know what the origin is of it, but. It's a very common theme for whatever reason, and of course that's for me personally, that was my first exposure, was him as the voice of the Whalers.
Right, I saw you. I never realized you were at the infamous Fighting Saints game.
Unbelievable.
I saw you posted that to Twitter yesterday along with the audio. It's unfortunate. I mean, I really wish that there was video of that incident somewhere. There's really not. There's still photos and
yes.
There's Noomi's call of the game, but you really can't find a video of that, which would be an incredible thing to watch. But that was another thing I had in common with him, because I love hockey, and that was something we'd always talk about, the rise and fall of the Bruins and the Kings respectively over the years, and it was something we always enjoyed. In fact, that was something that another one of the things that he obviously hit it off with was Eddie Olczyk, who he worked with as well. And I talked to Eddie yesterday, and he had been in touch with Michelle, Bob's wife, now widow. It's hard to talk about people in the past tense when you're not used to that. That was something they obviously had in common as well, as Eddie playing for all those years in the over 1,000 games in the NHL, and now going on to an accomplished career. But Eddie has loved horse racing since he was a kid as well, as just like Noomi did. So they were kind of two peas in a pod that way. Eddie was pretty upset over obviously what had transpired yesterday. So we're all pretty shook up about it, because we all genuinely liked him, and he just the way he acted and seemed, it just seemed like there should have been more years left for someone like that.
Exactly. I mean, that's the part is difficult to accept, and also because when he came back from the stroke, It didn't. There weren't any outward ill effects. So you thought, oh, he's back. He's fine. He's 100%. And in fact, it left a lasting, impression and created after effect challenges. So, it definitely were robbed of. More Noomi. And I don't know if you heard what I said to Kenny, but or to Billy about the presentation, Jay, of handicapping on the various networks and the way it's evolved. You know, because some, it seems like some networks and probably some, you know, producers have called for the shtick, you know, the kind of shtick things that, that aren't offensive by any means, but aren't serious either. But no matter, it seemed no matter what the presentation and the evolution, he was just, you know, so versatile and so able to you know, interact with whoever he was paired with and whatever the theme of whatever production that was being presented. That's something that to me is a lasting legacy of his.
Yeah, no, he would adjust to what was needed, but in, you know, fairness to him, he always made sure to present his portion of the information, you know, in a way where I think handicappers knew he was coming with a solid play and not just something flippant. He took it seriously, even when it was even when the instructions were to yuck it up a bit.
It will be just missed, and that expression from all different kinds of fans, and the nicest part of the remembrances that are coming are the casual fans and horse players and you know, people talking about running into him at Rockingham, at Suffolk, at Saratoga, at Breeders' Cups, at Triple Crown events. They all seem to have the same theme, Jay, which is they thought of him as a friend before they ever met him, and then that was kind of confirmed upon meeting him.
Right. No, he was just a very warm guy, and he loved the racetrack atmosphere. You know, he first was exposed to it through his father, who worked, you know, weekends as a mutual clerk at Suffolk. I mean, so he was exposed to it early on, and he liked that environment. And he just liked being a horse player, and he liked being around horse players.
Exactly. Well, Jay, I really appreciate it. You were the first person I reached out for, and I'm limited to 3 hours a day. As I told Billy, we could just have a parade for days of people that want to express how much they enjoyed knowing him and being a friend and a colleague and how much they're going to miss him.
You know, that's for sure. I mean, there's a lot of other people that he could certainly bring on, and they'd tell you more in the same of what Billy and Kenny and myself have. So I'm glad you devoted this time to him. He deserved it.
Jay, we'll talk later in the week, and pre-entry day, of course, for Breeders' Cup, and pre-entered fields released on Wednesday, and we'll start to gear up for the Cup.
Very good. I'll talk to you later in the week, Steve. Thanks.
Thank you. Jay Pridman, everybody. DRF Pridman, of course, and an NBC colleague for many years with Numi. Going to take a break here. Bottom of the hour. 90 minutes gone by in a blur. We'll have Rich Migliori join us. We'll talk a little bit about the weekend and some racing. Want to get that in and take a little bit of a breath, and then about the last hour and change, Mike Welsh. And we will get some Breeders' Cup division thoughts from Mike, who's got the sprint. And then he'll also, once we get out to Del Mar, he'll take a second race, I think the juvenile sprint on the turf. And then the final hour, Eddie Olchek, Randy Moss, and Lafitte and Kai III share their appreciations for Bob Neumeier. Back after this, Sirius XM at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only